You are listening to Coffee Before Pants.
Hello and welcome to Coffee Before Pants, the weekly podcast for readers, writers, poets, malingerers, and layabouts. This is the 19th episode, and I'm Mark, as usual. Notice I said weekly podcast. Yes, I reversed my decision to post bi-weekly. In my defense, I said that when I was fighting off a very tenacious bug of some sort. I apparently wasn't in my right mind. We all have those days. We all know that. Not to mention that I love doing this podcast, and trying to go every 2 weeks seemed a little too long. This week's focus is the literary merit of Pulp Fiction. I'm not talking about the Tarantino movie. I do like that movie, but I am, however, talking about where he got the title of the film. Pulp magazines were popular beginning in the 1920s, and their peak lasted into the early 50s. They were printed on cheap paper made from wood pulp, hence the name, opposed to the slick magazines of the day. They didn't depend on advertising, which I didn't know that until just yesterday, since, you know, magazines today are 25% advertising as it is. They didn't depend on that for their revenue. Their revenue was only the price of the magazine, which was anywhere from 10 to 25 cents, depending on when that was published. They were the predecessor to comic books. Many of the comic book heroes, such as Batman and Superman, were inspired by the heroes of the pulps. I'll get into that later. Before we go any further, it's time for the weekly history lesson. Coffee with Culture, a survey of this week in the history of literature, film, and music. April 7, 1770, poet and author William Wordsworth was born in Cumberland, England. Wordsworth and his friend Samuel Taylor Coleridge are credited with forming the Principles of Romanticism, a major poetry movement of the 19th century. April 7, 1915, marks the birthday of legendary jazz vocalist Billie Holiday, born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Holiday was an American jazz and swing music singer, her vocal style, strongly influenced by jazz instrumentalists, inspired a new way of manipulating phrasing and tempo. She was known for her vocal delivery and improvisational skills. She was one of the greatest jazz singers from the 30s to the 50s. She had no formal music training, but with an instinctive sense of musical structure and a deep knowledge of jazz and blues, she developed a singing style that was deeply moving and individual. Billie Holiday died at the age of 44 on July 17, 1959, of pulmonary edema and heart failure caused by cirrhosis of the liver. April 7, 1938 marks the birthday of trumpeter Freddie Hubbard, born in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hubbard was an American jazz trumpeter. He played bebop, hard bop, and post bop styles from the early 60s onward. His unmistakable and influential tone contributed to new perspectives for modern jazz and bebop. He played with other notable jazz dignitaries such as Wayne Shorter, Sonny Rollins, Eric Dolphy, Art Blakey, and Herbie Hancock. Hubbard died in December of 2008 at the age of 70 from complications caused by a heart attack he served the month previously. April 7, 1994, revival of Euripides' stage work Medea, starring Diana Rigg, opens at Longacre Theater, New York City, and runs for 83 performances. April 7, 2002, John Agar, who starred in many cheesy science fiction films such as Tarantula, Revenge of the Creature, and The Brain from the Planet Aros, died at the age of 81.
April 8th, 1955, novelist and writer Barbara Kingsolver was born in Annapolis, Maryland. Kingsolver has written several fictional and non-fictional works, but she became famous for her bestseller, The Poisonwood Bible. April 8th, 1990, Twin Peaks, created by David Lynch and starring Kyle MacLachlan, premieres on ABC TV. It was revealed later during the series that there was no real script to speak of. They just went with an idea and improvised. April 9th, 1821, French poet Charles Baudelaire was born in Paris. Baudelaire excelled in writing prose poetry and is credited with coining the term modernity. He also worked as an essayist, art critic, and translator. His poems are described as exhibiting mastery of rhyme and rhythm, containing an exoticism inherited from Romantics, and are based on observations of real life. April 10th, 1816, Lord Byron convinced Samuel Taylor Coleridge to publish his poem Kubla Khan. In 1797, after having a vivid opium-induced dream, Coleridge awoke with some 200 to 300 lines of poetry floating in his head. The words perfectly described his dream, a vision of Xanadu. Coleridge quickly began to write them down, but was interrupted by a visitor, and he was unable to finish. Isn't that the way it works? Coleridge spent years entertaining friends with his story, until his friend Lord Byron encouraged him to have the poem published after a particularly moving recitation. April 10th, 1953, House of Wax, one of my favorite movies, the first color 3D movie, premieres in New York. Although he had starred in several movies prior to this one, this is the movie that launched Vincent Price into being known as a horror actor. Another bit of trivia was that the director, Alex de Toth, was blind in one eye, so the 3D special effects were lost on him. April the 11th, 1967, Tom Stoppard's play Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead debuts in London at the Old Vic. The play expands upon the exploits of two minor characters from Shakespeare's Hamlet, the courtiers Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and the main setting is Denmark. The action of Stoppard's play takes place mainly in the wings of Shakespeare's Hamlet, with brief appearances of major characters from Hamlet who enact fragments of the original's scenes. Between these episodes, the two protagonists voice their confusion at the progress of events occurring on stage without them in Hamlet, of which they have no direct knowledge. There is also some confusion as to which character is Rosencrantz and which is Guildenstern. Apparently, they are as confused in this regard as well. April 11th, 2007, a popular author, Kurt Vonnegut, died in his Manhattan home weeks after suffering brain injuries from a fall in his brownstone. Vonnegut was the author of Slaughterhouse-Five, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, and other books and stories, and was one of America's most popular writers, remembered mostly for his sardonic wit. April 12, 1916. Award-winning children's author Beverly Cleary was born in McMinnville, Oregon. Cleary is one of the most celebrated American children's authors, having won the National Book Award, the Newbery Medal, the National Medal of Arts, and a Library of Congress Living Legend Award. Some of Cleary's most beloved books are the Ramona series, Henry Huggins, and The Mouse and the Motorcycle. April 12, 1932, Grand Hotel, directed by Edmund Goulding and starring Greta Garbo and John Barrymore, premieres in New York, includes the line by Greta Garbo, "I want to be alone." The film also starred Joan Crawford, Wallace Beery, Lionel Barrymore, and Jean Hersholt. The film won the Academy Award for Best Picture in 1932. April 12, 1940, pianist Herbie Hancock, born in Chicago, Illinois. Hancock is an American jazz musician, band leader, and composer. He started his career with trumpeter Donald Byrd's group. He shortly thereafter joined the Miles Davis Quintet, where he helped redefine the role of a jazz rhythm section and was one of the primary architects of the post-bop sound. April 13th, 1906, absurdist playwright and author Samuel Beckett was born in Dublin, Ireland. Beckett's dark comedy and unique take on drama helped create the theater of the absurd and led to Beckett winning the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1969. While Beckett's writings are extensive, his most recognizable play is Waiting for Godot. April 13, 1939, Irish poet Seamus Heaney was born in Castledawson, United Kingdom. Heaney is regularly known as a regional poet of Ireland. He won the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1995. His translation of Beowulf is also very well known and popular. Now moving on to our main subject, pulp magazines. Today, the phrase pulp in literary terms is used to refer to anything hard-boiled and tacky. Originally, pulp magazine was one that was printed on paper made directly from wood pulp, which rapidly yellows and becomes very brittle, leaving a shower of confetti on the reader. The pulps were originally a standard size, roughly 10 by 7, but in later years, some publishers changed to a large pulp or large flat format, roughly 11 by 8, to match the size of the slick magazines on the stand. Sometimes the paper was upgraded to a thicker or slightly coated stock. Strictly, these magazines aren't pulps, but tend to be grouped together because they are often continuations of existing pulp magazines. Pulp magazine titles range from crime and detective stories, romance, westerns, adventure, horror, and science fiction. I guess I want to focus mainly on the detective, horror, and science fiction pulps, since those are the genres whose writers carried on from the pulps into contemporary literature. Many so-called pulp writers are still being published today, including such as Isaac Asimov, Robert E. Howard, H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Rice Burroughs, Wisconsin's own Robert Bloch, Ray Bradbury, Raymond Chandler, and James M. Cain. One of the most important of all detective pulps was Black Mask from 1920 to 1951, which published both Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler, among others. Black Mask serialized Hammett's Maltese Falcon. Other pulp titles included Mystery and Detective Fiction Weekly. Detective pulp spawned two hybrid forms. First were the Weird Menace pulps, in which their victims, usually women, find themselves being hunted and tortured by sadistic villains. Covers of these pulps were decidedly formulaic and very lurid. The female victims always scantily clad, the villains monsters or monstrous humans deformed in some way or the other. The first of these pulps was Dime Mystery, then come Terror Tales, and Thrilling Mystery. The other descendants of the detective pulps were the hero pulp. Street and Smith led the way with The Shadow in 1931, a spin-off of a radio series. Other hero detectives include Doc Savage, The Spider, Operator Number 5, I seem to remember my dad liking that one, and The Phantom Detective, to name a few. The hero pulps, which would later inspire comics such as, like I said before, Batman and Superman, were also allied with science fiction pulps. The first of these was Amazing Stories, published by Hugo Gernsback in 1926. Amazing Stories may sound familiar. It was published until 2005. Astounding Stories is still with us, as far as I know, but the title changed to Analog in 1960. And also now Analog, if it's still around, it's a digest-sized magazine. It shed its pulp clothing and is now published in digest format. Other titles from pulp sci-fi age include Wonder Stories, Thrilling Wonder Stories, and Planet Stories. It was these pulps where writers such as Ray Bradbury, Robert I. Heinlein, Isaac Asimov, and Philip K. Dick first made their names. Closely related to science fiction pulps were the weird fiction and fantasy pulps, with titles such as Unknown, Bernard McFadden's Ghost Stories, and the best known of them all, Weird Tales.
Weird Tales published the majority of the best stories of H.P. Lovecraft, Robert E. Howard, who is the creator of Conan the Barbarian, along with Clark Ashton Smith, Robert Bloch, as I mentioned earlier, the author of Psycho, and Ray Bradbury was also published in Weird Tales, the stories later collected in Dark Carnival. By the late 30s and early 40s, pulp magazine sales began to be supplanted by the growing comic book industry. Many of the new comic book heroes were inspired by or a direct ripoff of earlier pulp heroes. I've mentioned a couple times Batman and Superman. Well, they were the first heroes, weren't they? Superman was directly inspired by two main sources. First, Philip Wiley's 1930 novel, Gladiator. The story concerns a scientist who invents an alkaline free radical serum to improve humankind by granting the proportionate strength of an ant and the leaping ability of a grasshopper. The scientist injects his pregnant wife with the serum, and his son Hugo Danner is born with superhuman strength, speed, and bulletproof skin. Hugo spends much of the novel hiding his powers, rarely getting a chance to openly use them. The other inspiration for Superman, intended or not, was Doc Savage, the Man of Bronze. Doc Savage is a fictional character of the competent man-hero type who first appeared in American pulp magazines during the 30s and 40s. Real name Clark Savage Jr. He is a polymathic scientist, explorer, detective, and warrior who, quote, rights wrongs and punishes evildoers, unquote. He was created by publisher Henry W. Ralston and editor John L. Nanovic at Street & Smith Publications, with additional material contributed by the series' main writer, Lester Dent, otherwise known as Kenneth Robeson. Doc Savage, like Superman, even had a Fortress of Solitude. Batman is one of my favorite comic book characters. Those who know me know that. Specifically the Batman of the 30s through the 70s. And yes, I love the 1966 series now, although that wasn't always the case. When I was a kid collecting Batman comic books, all the titles, I was more of a bat purist. I grew up, like many of us did, being told that Batman was created by Bob Kane. While it is true he came up with the character called Batman, it didn't look anything like what we know today. Bob Kane's colleague Bill Finger is the man behind the image we know of Batman. But that is a story possibly for another episode. Batman was inspired greatly by radio and pulp's The Shadow. Mysterious, dark, and merciless when dealing with criminals. A dark avenger, you get my meaning. Batman also drew inspiration from Doc Savage with science, knowledge, physical strength, and Sherlock Holmes, deduction and criminology. Pulp magazines have inspired a lot of artists, writers, movie directors. H.P. Lovecraft, as I mentioned before, was an inspiration for Stephen King, Neil Gaiman, horror author Brian Lumley, as well as directors John Carpenter. The Thing is based on a John W. Campbell story called Who Goes There? But the movie John Carpenter did was totally based on cosmic horror of the H.P. Lovecraft. Stuart Brand and Guillermo del Toro also were inspired by H.P. Lovecraft. If you watched Hellboy, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Detective pulps were the inspiration for current hard-boiled films such as Sin City and, yes, Tarantino's Pulp Fiction. The pulps that I have mentioned have, for the most part, disappeared from public knowledge, held on to by a few, well, fanatics, such as myself. Look at any bookstore, and you will see anthologies based on Weird Tales, Analog, or Amazing Stories. Disparaged at the time of their heyday as cheap, tawdry, or exploitive, and which some, yes, were. They have come to be recognized as legitimate literature for the most part. I might also note at the time of pulp magazine's popularity, apparently books, actual books, were very expensive. the common person was not able to afford books. The pulps allowed people to be able to read. Some ideology behind the pulps did, I admit, devolve into the cheap, tawdry, and downright badly written, such as the formulaic and incestuous series like The Executioner or The Death Merchant or The Destroyer, which many of you know by as Remo Williams. Still, I would rather see someone reading these trashy novels than seeing someone with their nose in their smartphone. The same with comic books, which are markedly more intelligent than the books I just mentioned. At least people are reading. And I occasionally appreciated books that would deign as mindless. Not all reading has to be instructive or educational. A lot of it can be entertaining. Personally, for my so-called mindless reading, I am currently attempting to read, still, the complete works of H.P. Lovecraft. Then possibly I will go to all of Edgar Rice Burroughs' books. I have a head start on the Tarzan books, having read at least 4 or 5. I lose track. Tarzan, by the way, was first published in Argosy magazine, one of the very first pulps. I want to know what your mindless reading is. Seriously, no judgment whatsoever. You can read whatever you want. If it makes you happy to read, then read all you want. That is my main message. I'm not here to tell you what to read. I am here to offer suggestions or recommendations. If I feel strongly about a book, I want to share the good news. We don't always have the same taste in what we read, but at least, as I say all the time, at least you're reading. Thanks for listening. This is a short one today, this week. If you like what you hear, though, please let me know. Either in the comments or by contacting me at the website, Coffee Before Pants. It's not necessary to light up the bat signal, but it would be a lot cooler if you did. And if you'd like to support Coffee Before Pants in a financial sense, there are links to my Ko-fi and Patreon page, as well as a link to my Etsy shop. And a shout out to Deb and Edmund for your purchase, by the way. And as always, I will close this week's episode of Coffee Before Pants with the poem of the week. Today's poem of the week is by Timothy Russell, titled In Dissecta Membra. The liver is located so close to the brain, the two of them are often mistaken for twins. What soothes this one afflicts that one, and preserving either jeopardizes the other. The kidneys govern by default, like Congress. The stomach throbs and pulses with bureaucracy. The overriding function of the reproductive organs has top priority. Despite its low intelligence, the penis has a strong will to the point of brutality. The uterus is lined with shelves of ancient books. Every other body process is subordinate. The heart works like hell, 4 rooms in a bath where ends can barely be met. With no view at all. The eye is the largest organ. It contains the world. The spinal column is proof that we were meant to be plants. The lungs censor whatever floats in the air. The mind produces torment as if it were a hormone, but it itself is illusory, a phenomenon of the brain as insubstantial as a promise. The rest is awful. The pancreas, the spleen, the tongue, and the lips. Again, that was by Timothy Russell. Thank you for joining me tonight with Coffee Before Pants. We'll see you next week. Yes, I said next week. I've got to get working on next week's episode. Have a good night, and I hope you find some good books to read.
I love the Java Jive and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the Java and me. A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup.
Boy.
I love Java, sweet and hot. Whoops, Mr. Moto, I'm a coffee pot. Shoot me the pot and I'll pour me a shot. A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup.
You have been listening to Coffee Before Pants, a production of The Book Is Always Better Enterprises.